I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, oh, I've gone on to a new episode of something else. I wonder what this is. Oh, wait, is this shit? I thought I unsubscribed from that, did I? Or maybe I didn't. Or maybe I thought it automatically unsubscribed me because I left it there for weeks and didn't listen. Well, I probably did. This is probably one of the old episodes that it's kept. Or else you just, I don't know, it's just popped up somewhere like that thing. I have that happen to me a lot. I go and listen to my own podcast lately on Spotify just to see what it's like. And every time I finish it, it puts up some other podcast after it that I'm not subscribed to, not remotely interested in. Some crude English thing about something like shag married something something. Some fella and his wife talking vulgar crap. Not vulgar crap the way I talk about her on this podcast, as I will on this episode. You'll hear me discuss my arse, among other things. I'll be doing that in an intellectual way. I'll be talking about how my arse was an inspiration for two episodes earlier in this year. And I won't be gross about it. You get something like, shag married, have a podcast together or something. Every time I listen to my podcast, oh, it says you're done now. Here's that other thing you like. I wish them no ill will. I just don't want to listen to it. So can Spotify please stop making me listen to things that I don't want? But no, the point is, I sympathise with anyone on Spotify who's now being forced to listen to this because it just popped up. You're probably listening to some very intelligent programme, a philosophy show, perhaps. Maybe you're listening to that Philosophise This programme. That's very good. I listen to that too. I listen to Philosophise This and I listen to... Hold on, I'll tell you what else I listen to. I listen to Philosophize This, a Skeptico, some music albums thing where I listen to one in four episodes because I've never heard of the musicians on the other four. I listen to The Podcast Coach, The Overnightscape, Red Bar Radio. What else? This Is Not a Podcast by Daniel Ruse Tyson. I listen to Security Now. I listen to Static Radio. The Overnightscape Underground, and Ruben Erd Show occasionally, because he makes a show occasionally. He put one out last October, and I listened to it last week, because he put out his next show last week. So I thought, oh, good, I can listen to the previous one now, because now I know there's another one after it. And then I listened to The Infinite Monkey Cage. So that's what I listened to. Don't get the idea that I'm just listening to loads of shows about arses and then I'm being a hypocrite by critiquing this thing on Spotify that I don't subscribe to but gets played for me. No, I understand. I understand. You're listening to this on Spotify. You've been listening to one of your intellectual shows, just as I have, and then I come up after it, uninvited. No, I sympathise. What I can suggest is you listen to it for a while. It'll be a bit like when you're one of those people and you get held captive as a hostage for 3 or 4 years. You get to know the people who are keeping you hostage and you kind of get to care about each other to an extent. And it's a bit like that. I'm not keeping you hostage though, remember. It's the system that Spotify has. They put this on after. And it's not my fault. I haven't paid for anything on there to advertise this or shove it into your face. In fact, now that I think about it, maybe I'm not being shoved into your face at all. Maybe that couple who does the shag married, whatever the hell it was, maybe they paid to have that shoved in my face. Well, they're wasting their money if that's the case. I hope they know. I hope they know. Someone needs to better advise them. To get on with today, items that need to be attended to, issues that need to be addressed, topics. We've got lots and lots of topics. We're positively moving to the seams with topics. We've got topics coming out of this flashlight. A flashlight here. It's tied to my desk here. There is a reason for that, because I don't want to mislay it. I want to be able to find it when I need it, because I don't keep it in my pocket, and therefore it's not a pocket torch. That's just a label that branding people put on it, because it's an indicator of its size and the way some people might use it. Well, no, I have a bit of an imagination and I don't use everything the exact same way the branding experts tell me to. So if you sell me something that says pocket torch on it, you can be damn sure to Christ as hell I'm not going to go around saying, this is my pocket torch. I keep it in my pocket. Now, as it happens, I do have 3 of these torches. And during the winter months, I keep one of them in my pocket if I'm going for an early morning bus. And then the rest of the time, I keep it in my school bag. Just in case. I can't find a fucking bus stop in the dark. Well, I can find a bus stop in the dark. That's not entirely accurate. I can find our local bus stop in the dark, no problem. One time I got on the bus with blood streaming from the bridge of my nose because I'd walked under and into a sign that I'm pretty sure said something like, "Welcome to Wicklow," shortly after we'd moved back here. So I bring a torch to the bus stop now and I point it everywhere. Sometimes I get on the bus and then I point it into the seats to make sure I'm not about to sit on some poor bastard's lap. Then I put it away. I usually turn it off there and I hope to Christ that by the time I get to my destination, the sun has come up. Except not too far, because I find it difficult to see in bright sunlight as well. In an ideal world, the sun would come up, but it would stay behind some clouds, and it wouldn't come up too far, and it would temporarily dip below the horizon. Just before, when I'm ready to come home, if I'm standing at a bus stop in the city, I'd like the sun to temporarily dip below the horizon so I can watch out for the lights of the bus coming. So that makes that easier. But then it could come up again once I'm safely on the bus home. Now, you might think that's an unrealistic thing, but you may remember. I think it was about 80 or 90 years ago. Some children witnessed an appearance of Jesus' mother Mary at some sort of a ghetto thing somewhere. And a load of crowds gathered watching it, and then eventually there was reports from witnesses of the sun going up and down and doing a little display. So if they can have that, and those children aren't even, they're not even vision impaired or anything, I have a need for that. I have a need for the sun to be able to move like that on command. It would make my life quite significantly easier. I don't see why I shouldn't get that. Those 3 children who witnessed that, they became superstars, as far as I'm aware. Or did they get turned into swans? No, that was a different thing. That's an Irish mythological tale. The children of Lear, for some reason, they got turned into swans, and they're still somewhere. They're swans somewhere. I never understood as a child whether we were supposed to be impressed or sad or delighted at that story. There are these children. They had their whole lives ahead of them, and I forget most of the gist of the story, but it ends with somehow they getting turned into swans, and they're in some lake somewhere, going around. Now, I suppose it depends. It's not for me to prejudge or assume whether or not those children enjoy being swans. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But they've nothing really to compare it to, other than to being a child human. Being a child human for most children is an excellent experience, but they grow up to be adult swans and they can't say, "Oh, I'm glad I'm an adult swan and not an adult human. I don't like being an adult human." Well, how would you know? You've never been one. You've never been one. Maybe if whatever happened to turn you into swans could come along when you're about 25 and temporarily turn you back into humans for 6 months. And then you could see, then you could have a comparison and see. Hopefully it would turn out he'd prefer being the swans. And you could go back to being the swans then, but he'd be even more appreciative of it. But if it turned out then that he preferred life as a human, he wouldn't get turned back into a human, because that would be ridiculous, I assume, unless it fits the story somehow, which, as we've already established, I don't know how or why they got turned into swans. Well, it seems unlikely that whatever the storyline or the protagonists involved, it seems unlikely that they'd be prepared to turn them back into humans on command at age 25, so long as they had a 6-month trial back in the thing. That would be ridiculous. Although, some would say that the base story itself, the baseline story, before I even add my stuff to it, is ridiculous, the whole idea. I don't know. What's ridiculous about being a swan? There are millions of creatures on this planet who are swans every day of their life. There's swans going around right now who are swans. Some of them know they're swans, some of them don't. Some of them might be faintly aware that there's an alternative life as a human that can be lived, except they're probably not aware that it's available for them to switch over to it, because it isn't. It's not available to them. And how can it be available to them if they don't even know to look for it? Maybe it is. Maybe it's possible for swans, if they just know how to do it, to switch over to being humans, and it's just that they've never been educated in that thing. They say most human beings are psychic in some way. They just don't know. They just don't know. Well, I suppose that's possible. I suppose that's possible. It's also possible for someone to lift up a car with their bare hands and hold it up above their heads and shoulders. Doesn't mean you're going to do it. Doesn't mean you're going to do it at all. Why would that mean you're going to do it? It wouldn't. That's the thing. I think I've lost my track here. Anyway, we've got topics coming out of... Topics coming out of my arse. I think I've said that before. I said that a few months ago. I said, topics coming out of my arse. And then I elaborated a bit. I think the next week I spoke about how I regretted elaborating a bit. So let's not do that again. There doesn't always have to be a thing where it goes, I've got topics coming out of... and say the first thing I see. Now, back on that particular episode, I didn't look around and see my arse and go, oh, topics coming out of my arse. No, I looked around. I couldn't find inspiration. I usually find some object or something around me that inspires me to get going. But no, I looked around that day. I said, topics coming out of this arse. Now, did I give the impression that I found an arse on the desk beside me and I picked it up and said, oh, this will do, this arse? No, that's not what happened at all that time. I said, topics coming out of this arse. I hadn't just found an arse. I knew there was an arse here. I knew I was sitting on an arse because I was relatively comfortable at the time. As I am now, I'm relatively comfortable now. I'm bolt upright on an old antique chair, with my mouth crammed into this microphone thing. Gee, I'm not that comfortable, to be honest. My arse is jammed up against the bottom of this old chair. I'm going to put a fucking office chair in here. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a proper office chair and put it in here and put my arse on it. And then hope to Christ it doesn't start squeaking like the one in the other room, because that's a problem. I don't need another thing squeaking in here. It's hard enough to edit out the... Yeah, like that cough, for example. Did you hear that cough? You probably didn't, because I edited it out. That's quite surprising. I was going on about editing things out and I say cough. I cough my lungs out. That's the first time I've coughed my lungs out in several weeks on this program. That's it. I think possibly it's because I've been spraying Febreze everywhere. One of my kittens had an accident last night and managed to accidentally shit into both my shoes and my wife's shoes at opposite sides of the bed. That's easily done, especially if there's two kittens. They probably took one side each and they said, we're going to shit in their shoes, fuck it. Well, as we speak, those two kittens are at the vets getting their recreative parts disconnected. So, we're evens now. Now, I didn't do that as revenge. I was booked some weeks ago. Well, no, they're getting their parts disconnected now. And that'll shut them up for a while. And perhaps they'll learn a bit of manners. And learn to be more like the late Bowsy the cat, who they look like but do not yet behave like. Bowsy didn't go around shitting in our shoes. We've had a lot of cats over the last 20 years or so, and most of them have managed to get through their day without shitting in someone's shoes. Most of them have done that. Occasionally one or two of them will catch a mouse and accidentally drop it into a shoe. But that's different. That's different. And my wife did turn up at work one day and find a mouse in her shoe. It was very entertaining for a class of children, and it was fine. But no, shitting in someone's shoes, that's a bit much. We worry about the next generation. You think children these days, they're doing new things, they're having new experiences, and it's hard to figure out whether it's okay that they're doing things that you didn't do when you... My father used to go nuts because he heard me listening to Billy Joel when I was 12. He said, "That's a fucking scumbag punk rocker. You're listening to that punk rocker. You're going to be corrupt. You're corrupting your little brother." I was the little brother. I presume he said that to my brother because my brother introduced me to Billy Joel. And then later he introduced me to Queen. Queen died about a year after my father. So thanks very much for that, brother. Introduced me to another death. Another fucking death. So then I think I got into Bill Hicks. He died. In fact, he was already dead. And then I got into several other musicians and comedians and other things that were either already dead or nearly dead. I think I got into Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy just before your man who created it died. There was your man out of Father Ted. Who else? Oh, they're all, every single fucking one of them, all dead. All, even Queen did a song called All Dead in the 70s. They predicted it. They said, "Don't get into this shit. We'll all be dead soon." But I didn't listen, no. I spent a year going round secondhand record shops getting my hands on every single Queen tape I could until I had every Queen studio album on secondhand cassette tape. And then Freddie Mercury decided to drop dead and not tell anyone. He said, "I'm going to drop dead. I'm going to leave them guessing. I'll be wandering around outside an AIDS clinic and I'll drop dead. And it'll be obvious that it wasn't from AIDS. It was from, oh, I probably had a... had a cold or something." Like Jim Henson. Remember Jim Henson? He dropped dead too. I think he got something and then he said, "I can't have a blood transfusion because it's against my religion. So I'm going to die instead. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to die instead because fuck this shit. Fuck this. It's not like I have children. They're not real. They're just fucking puppets. Puppets aren't children. I don't have children." Well, I don't have children either, but I have cats. I wouldn't just go and drop dead just because God said I can't have a blood transfusion. Fuck that shit. Although I respect your right to do so. Each to their own. Each to their own. But at least make arrangements for your kittens and your cats if you go to do that. Even if they're shitting everywhere, they're your responsibility. So go and make sure you have a... like Disney did. Or Walt Disney, the fellow who did all the drawing. And he made all the mouses and things. And then there was Roy Disney. He was the bookkeeper. I think he's still there, is he? Or he was until quite recently. He was the chief bookkeeper at Disney Inc. He said, "I'm going to..." Well, he didn't say anything. He just got on with it. Not everyone has to say something, especially if you're in the accounts office. You don't have to go around saying things. Walt Disney had that television program that he presented for a long time. He presented that program every week. He'd come on and say, "Hello, I'm Disney, and this is my world. I'm going to introduce some cartoons or something advertising that thing that I'm building in Florida or something." Roy Disney didn't do that. He didn't come on and say, "Hello, I'm going to introduce something about the latest trading profit and loss accounts for Disney Inc. for the last year. Here's a look at our stationery account." He did not. Maybe he wanted to. I shouldn't assume that he didn't want to. He just didn't have the opportunity. They don't give opportunities like that to accountants. The only accountant who gets that opportunity is on the televised national lottery draw. They have a fella from the auditors who comes on and he sits in the background. And they say, "Look, here's the auditor. He's sitting in the background watching so you all know it's all above board." And usually he winks at the camera or something. And that's the most we get from accountants over here. So I assume Roy Disney didn't have a program. Jim Henson had a program for a while that was very like the Walt Disney one. He'd come on and say, "Hello, this is the wonderful world of Disney, except it's not Disney." Except it kind of is, because at the moment I'm in the middle of a long process of selling my company to Disney. So what happens then, I don't know. Am I expected to? I suppose it depends. Which of us dies first? Does Walt Disney die first or do I die first? Or do we both live forever? And then does one of us do 6 months of these shows in the winter? And then the other one comes on as the summer replacement? I don't know. Well, if that happens, I'll do the summer replacement because I'm the one who's prone to dying of bronchitis and stuff like that. So I'll come out in the summer and Disney can do it in the winter. I can't remember what Disney died of. Probably died of something. They all do. They all die of something. And may they all rest in peace. And then who else was there? Roald Dahl had a program as well. Now that was a bit different. I think it was called Tales of the Unexpected. It was a bit like the Twilight Zone, except it was English. He'd come on and introduce these stories, and sometimes he'd know the writers. He'd say, oh, I know this writer, he's great. He wrote the following story that I'm about to introduce, the televised version of, so he's great. And then he'd go away and then he'd write more children's stories in his shed. Roald Dahl used to write in his shed. I know this because there's footage of him talking about writing in a shed. They show him walking over to the shed and then sitting in it, settling down for the day to write. And then they keep filming him and then wonder why he isn't writing anything. He's not writing anything because you're there filming him. Get out of his fucking shed. The man's trying to do some work and you're filming him. He's very self-conscious. Previous generations, they weren't used to being influencers and being filmed everywhere and tweeting everything. And being on Instagram and TikTok, but they're very self-conscious. When someone came over to their shed to film them writing the sequel to Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator or something, they didn't go, oh, look, I'm going to be a TV star, film me now. They didn't. They were modest. They said, oh, Christ, I'm on television. But they also thought television is sacred, so you have to look serious. You have to look serious at the camera. And be respectful, because in those days, television was taken very seriously. If you were watching the news one night, the main evening news at 9 o'clock, and there was a fella standing in front of government buildings doing his report, and some kid came up behind him and started waving at the camera or pulling faces, people would say, that's an absolute fucking disgrace. Arrest that child. Put him in the House of Detention. Paul Simon had a song. He went, something, 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 going to put him in the House of Detention. Now, that wasn't about someone interrupting the Irish Bain Evening News by pulling faces behind a reporter. But you get the idea. You get the idea. I've been listening to a lot of Paul Simon lately. He has this song, it was against the law. It was against the law. What the mama saw. It was against the law. He didn't stipulate whether it was against the law for his mother to see it. Just what she saw was against the law. Who decided that? Who judged that? I don't know. Could probably determine it by listening to the lyrics. They're quite extensive. And it's, after all, sort of a ballad. But no, I prefer to just listen because I like the tunes and the melodies. I like the tunes and the melodies of Paul Simon's songs lately. They're very nice. I suppose the words are quite good too, but that's a bonus. If I want to just listen to words, I go and become a Bob Dylan fan. I'd say, hello, give me 8 verses about Christ knows what, but just give me all the words. Give me all the words you have, line them up in a row and say them very fast. So it gets the song done and dusted in about 9 minutes, even though there's 12 verses, and then do a bit of harmonica in the middle. If I wanted that, I'd go listen to Bob Dylan. I wouldn't just go up to Paul Simon and say, please just put more words in your songs. I want more words, less melodies. No. And the words he used are probably perfectly adequate anyway. Some of them are very good, I believe. Some of them are very good, I believe. He's considered one of the better songwriters, I'm given to understand. Did he write that one about the bridge? I think he did. Well, it's not about a bridge. He's saying he's like a bridge. He's not claiming to be an actual bridge. He's claiming to be a substitute for a bridge. He's saying, that's a bridge. I'm not a bridge. I'm not a piece of public engineering infrastructure. But I'll be more effective than that. Just not in the sense of, I don't want you to drive over me. That's what I'm saying. But I want to be of use to you. I want to be of use to you in some way that I consider possibly to be more valuable than being a piece of tarmac that you drive over in order to not fall into some canyon somewhere. Because apparently Paul Simon doesn't put much value on that. He thinks falling into a canyon somewhere, people do that every second minute. You can build a bridge and get over it. I do something more valuable. I offer a metaphorical bridge over a troubled water. A normal bridge just goes over water and doesn't care whether it's troubled or not. It just goes over it. Actually, that would be better. If you have a bridge that just goes over the water, regardless of whether it's troubled or not, have it going up so high and have the traffic going so fast, you don't even notice whether the water is troubled or not. You just never notice the water at all and not be traumatized. Troubled water is bad. That's what the word trouble means. It's bad. You don't want to be exposed to it at all. For it'd be even better would be if you wanted to be a viaduct that's up so high, and possibly a high-speed train, one of those night trains where there's curtains and it goes over the bridge at night so you don't have to notice the water at all. That would be of more value, I would argue. But then what do I know? I don't know anything. I don't know anything. Neither does Roald Dahl. Roald Dahl there, he's sitting there in his shed. He's going, oh, these fuckers are filming me. What do I do now? They're going to ask me stuff. Oh, that's what they did. They showed him by the setting up his stall, setting up his desk. Him in the shed, not saying anything. See, you showed him not saying anything, but then you put his voice over it. So you could see he's not saying that stuff, even though it appears to be in his voice, but he's not saying it. Or he's saying it in another time and place. Or else it's all a fake. He didn't set up for a day of writing at all. They just faked it. And then it says, stop now, we've got enough footage showing you setting up for the day. Now stop setting you up because you want to spend the morning interviewing you instead. And then we'll put the audio over the footage of you setting up for the day. Now, I hope that doesn't inconvenience you having your shed all set up. You want to unset her up now before we do the interview and see if you happen to do it later. Because I know that would be quite annoying. We film you and then we go home. And then it's about 5 in the evening and you're called in for your dinner. And you say, oh Christ, I have the shed all set up for the day. I have to unset her up now, which is rather annoying. I've noticed lately when I go, I can't leave it in because if I leave it in, you just hear me going, And the thing has already cut out the sound that has caused me to go, And I go, on here. If I ever accidentally leave it in, please know that I'm not making that sound to try and impress you. I'm making that sound because I've just had a nice long sup of beverage from this bottle here. And it's been very refreshing because I've been talking for some time and my throat is dry. Look, I'll show you now. I'll try it again now. Here we go. Now that felt a bit fake, even though it wasn't. I was thinking as I did it, this isn't going to work at all. I've just had a big long slug of beverage out of this bottle less than a minute ago, and now I'm trying to recreate it. It's not going to be as satisfying at all. So when I drink it and I go, it's going to be fake. But thankfully it turned out it wasn't fake at all. Turns out I was more thirsty than I thought still. So that's good. The only problem is, the way I have this thing set up now is that it cuts out various noises automatically. You don't hear me sipping the beverage, but you hear me going, So I manually cut out the now anyway. I would like to leave it in, but I can't leave it in on its own because it just sounds ridiculous. It's unexplained. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll be able to manage some way I can do this as a special once-off. I can leave it in here because I've explained it. Hopefully. Of course we can't guarantee that sort of thing. There's no way you can guarantee anything like that. There are no guarantees in this life. You can take that to the bank and say, hello, I got this thing saying there are no guarantees in life. And they'll say, oh, that's just an IOU. And it's a negative IOU because it says IOU, no guarantees. That's basically nothing. That's nothing. I suppose you could use it to apply for insurance. One thing you can't insure is a certainty. So if you have something saying that the event that you're insurance for can't be guaranteed to happen, that might help you in some way, I suppose. But not very much. They'll say, oh wait, this thing is such a high risk that someone saw fit to write down that there's a chance it mightn't happen. That's not a good thing at all. No, your premium for that is going to be absolutely massive. Of that you can be quite sure. Quite sure, but not guaranteed at all. Cats walk into a bar. One of the cats goes straight up to the bar counter and says, hello, can I have a pint of your finest Guinness, please? And the man behind the bar says, "Pint of your finest Guinness coming up. Can you try and make sure you don't pop your peas quite as much as last time? Because I was a bastard to edit. I was an absolute bastard to edit. And if I'm honest, there was a bigger bastard was the K's and the C's. The P's, at least you can just go, no, fuck that shit. People pop their P's, deal with it. But no, the K's and C's are being quite disgusting lately. They have to be dealt with. You have to go in there, you try and remove the bulk of the sharp bit of the K, but not all of it, because then you've no K. If you remove all of the sharp bit of the K, then there's no K. It's like removing the peak of a mountain. You're left with nothing. Well, you're not left with nothing. You're left with a far more usable piece of land than was there before the mountain. You're left with a large increase in property values, for one thing. There used to be a mountain there, and now there's flat land. Although maybe there's not flat land, because let's be fair, you've just demolished a mountain. All that rock and stone and earth has to go somewhere. And where it's going to go, I don't know. I suppose you could move it around a bit. If you've demolished a mountain, presumably you've broken up the rocks somewhat, so they're manipulatable to an extent, so you can level them out somewhat, I assume. Or maybe you could just reshape the mountain so it's like a table mountain, like the one outside Cape Town in South Africa. There's a mountain there called Table Mountain. So called because people think it's shaped like a table. No, it's not shaped like a table at all. I've been to Cape Town. Table Mountain is not shaped like a table. It has no legs. It's just a mountain that's flat on top. If anything, it's shaped like one of those stone benches they put in parks now. They put street furniture that's just a block of concrete. Because God forbid some homeless people should be comfortable on it. Or some non-homeless person should be comfortable. Most people who are not homeless nowadays are coming from a house that barely has any concrete furniture in it at all. Certainly not any garden furniture, because they don't have gardens in apartments. To go out to these places where there's public benches. But the public benches are being replaced with these lumps of concrete. And you're supposed to sit your arse on that and say, "Oh, look, I'm enjoying the public park. Isn't it great? I'm sitting on this lump of concrete." Christ only knows what concrete is made from. Well, Christ made everything by doing magic. But no, concrete is made from water and cement and sand. You mix it together, put the water in at just the right moment, make damn sure that Christ is held, and when you put the water in, you're ready to use that concrete, because it's going to become unusable. They say concrete has a life of hundreds of years. It doesn't. It has a life of about an hour if you don't use it. You have to use it. Use it. If you ever get your hands on some wet, fresh concrete, use it, or you're going to regret it. You're going to be left there after half an hour and you have this bucket of concrete in your lap. And you say, "Oh, look, someone gifted me this concrete. I'm still trying to find out what to do with it. I thought maybe I could use it to make a mold of this bucket, I suppose." I suppose that's all I can do now. Make a mold of this bucket. I have a bucket here. It's a bucket I used to mix concrete in. At least I've used it once to mix concrete in. Unfortunately, it turns out concrete is very permanent. So I'm only going to use this bucket once. So at least I can make a concrete mold of this bucket as a memory of that time when I made some concrete in a bucket. Like one of those sculptures. People like to make sculptures and put them in parks. They say, "Oh, look. Here's a sculptor of a starving person in the 1850s who was dying in the potato famine. He'll make a sculptor of them because he used a lot less materials. There's a sculptor somewhere in Dublin of a starving family fleeing the famine. And they're all so thin, they look like sticks." I understand there was, I assume, I don't understand, but I assume it was relatively low cost to make, at least compared to that other one of your man. Oh, your man with the big red beard who used to be the singer in the Dubliners. They made a statue of him with a big red beard on him in a park in Dublin. That's just his whole head. And a big, huge, gigantic red head, beard and hair and stuff. It gets vandalised a lot, I understand. That probably cost a fortune to make. If you're making hair, most of the bulk of his head is hair. But here, when you turn it into concrete or metal or pottery or whatever the sculptor is made of, that's going to be quite expensive. If you're making it, that fella from the Dubliners, you know your man. Hang on, I'm trying to jog your memory here. He did that thing. I think he did that thing anyway. Score not is simplicity and something, something. That fella, the old Dubliners, the young Dubliners, I mean, before they turned into people who just had beards. Well, your man had a beard too. But they have different beards. They turned into old people with grey beards. He was unique, that fella, I understand. He's been dead for some time, but they're also all dead now, so what difference it makes, I don't know. I suppose it makes about 40 years difference, because the rest of them all lived to a ripe old age, and he died young. Same as the fella out of Tin Lizzy. There's a statue of him in Dublin as well. They made a statue of him out of some sort of black material. Because they said, oh, look, there's a fella in Dublin. This was in the 1970s. We didn't have a lot of black people in Dublin. So they said, look, Phil Dinnett, he's very famous now. Let's make a statue of him that's black. And they put his hair on it. But like the other fella, they don't make the hair on the statue out of hair. They make it out of far more expensive stuff. The statue of the hair is made out of the same stuff as the flesh of the statue, so to speak. It's made out of... Oh, it's made out of whatever the rest of the statue is made out of. They don't go saying, oh, look, this part of him is just hair. Now, I know the hair was a big part of his character, so we should make it out of the same stuff as the rest of him. Or else we should make the hair out of something even more valuable. Maybe we should make the hair out of gold. It certainly would have been appropriate for the fella out of the Dubliners. He didn't have gold hair, but he had very, very standout red hair. And that's close enough. So if you're going to put gold on anything, put it on his hair. Maybe they were afraid because of the vandalism. People will just steal it. They say, oh, look, that fella has gold hair. This is a reminder of the affluent 1970s Dublin, where all these people were going around playing guitars, playing traditional musical songs, and just basically putting gold in their hair. At least Phil Lynott didn't do that. Phil Lynott didn't go around putting gold in his hair. Although, to be fair, nor did the other fella, and I'm not accusing him of doing so. I'm accusing the people in a parallel universe who make another version of his statue where they put more value into his hair than the rest of the statue. I'm accusing them of putting gold in it, which obviously they didn't. Well, not obviously. It's obviously that their counterparts in this universe didn't do that. I've no way of knowing whether there could be millions of other statues of him in parallel universes that are all made of gold or of things even more valuable and obscenely wasteful than gold. But there's nothing I can do about that. I leave that to my counterparts in those universes. I've no business interfering. I'm sure he's perfectly capable of doing that. Suffice to say, no, the cat says. How is that Guinness getting along? And the barman says, oh, I forgot. We're in a two cats walk into a bar story. And the cat says, we're always in a two cats walk into a bar story. How would you forget that? You're literally standing at a bar, talking shit, and pouring a Guinness. And the man behind the bar says, well, that answers your question as to how the Guinness is going. I'm pouring it. And the cat says, are you on the initial pouring, or the stage where you come back after 3 hours and pour the rest of the head? And barman says, that's a good question. How long have we been here? And the cat says, we've been here about... Well, it really depends on what we edit this down to. We've been here at least 11 minutes, but a lot of this will probably end up being cut out, especially the thing about the beards and the statues and all that tripe. I think that's what I meant when I asked, what in the name of Christ are you talking about? Did I ask that? I can't remember now. I've been asking a lot lately, so let's assume I did ask it. And if we didn't, let's just say I'm asking it now. I'm saying, what in the name of Christ are you talking about? And the barman says, this is the end of the program. Good morning.